this is your Polycast for Tuesday, January 24th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, a health scare as Governor Dayton faints during his State of the State address. Governor Mark Dayton's staff says he's recovering from a collapse during last night's State of the State. Dayton fainted 45 minutes into his remarks. He hit his head and he fell to the ground. He was helped from the Minnesota House Chamber, and aides say he was able to walk away from the Capitol. He intends to press ahead today with his planned budget release. Brian Baxt has more about what happened last night.
From the moment Dayton entered the chamber at 7 sharp, it was clear he wasn't at full health. He entered from a side door rather than make the traditional walk down the center aisle. He was unsteady as he moved to his place on the rostrum and stumbled, with those around him stretching to catch him. Dayton had to crack a joke at his own expense.
I knew I should have shown up for the walkthrough.
Dayton went forward with the speech, his breathing labored at first.
Mr. Speaker, majority and minority leaders and members of the Minnesota House of Representatives.
But it didn't take long for him to settle into a comfortable pace. The DFL governor talked about progress he says the state has made over the 6 years he's been in office. He warned against a, quote, feast of tax giveaways with Minnesota's budget surplus. He previewed a proposal to bump up school funding by $371 million. And just as he was on the verge of a signature proposal in the speech, an ambitious health care initiative, he paused to drink some water. His hands shook, his voice slurred, and then he fainted.
But despite that awful cost,
his head snapped off the podium.
Get him to the ground. Get him to the ground, please.
His fall was broken by Secretary of State Steve Simon and DFL Senator Matt Klein of Mendota Heights. Klein is one of two doctors in the state Senate who came to the governor's aid. Republican Senator Scott Jensen of Chaska says he instinctively rushed into action when he saw Dayton's head slump.
That was partly why I responded. Yeah, I think he did. He hit his head, he fainted, and now he's stable.
Paramedics were there before long. After about 5 minutes on the floor, Dayton was helped into a back room. Dayton's son, Eric, tweeted that he was with his father, who was feeling better. The governor's chief of staff issued a statement saying Dayton went home after a routine check by paramedics and planned to be back at work for his previously planned budget release. The governor will turn 70 years old on Thursday and has 2 years left in a second and final term. He's had multiple surgeries since taking office to deal with spine and nerve issues. Last January, he fainted during a political event and was taken to a hospital. He has canceled some appearances over the last couple of months and has said he's been unable to shake off a bad cold. DFL Representative Alice Hausman of St. Paul says she could tell Dayton was off.
You know, early on when he came, he fell. I wish somebody would have thought to just suggest that he sit while he gave his address. You know, he's always in pain, and that takes its toll.
Republican leaders from the House and Senate extended their well wishes. They refrained from critiquing the parts of the speech that were delivered. Veteran Republican Representative Greg Davids of Preston says he wouldn't be bothered if Dayton delayed the release of his budget and rested up instead.
I've been to 25 of these and never seen anything like this before, and I hope all Minnesotans pray for our governor tonight.
Hausman says she feels bad that Dayton didn't make it through to the end.
It was an exciting speech, and he was coming to an exciting conclusion. So hopefully the speech gets released and we can digest the last of his guidance.
At the time of the incident, Dayton was about to call for a public option in the individual insurance market. He was preparing to say that Minnesota Care, which is a public insurance program for the working poor, be added to Minsure's menu of options for anyone. The administration says it could mean better coverage and lower premiums for people now unhappy with their private market health insurance. That won't be an easy sell with the legislature. But Dayton is set to start the sales pitch today when he's due back at work. Covering politics, I'm Brian Baxt at the Capitol.
Republican Senator Scott Jensen of Chaska is a family practice physician who ran to help the governor after he fell at the rostrum. Kathy Werzer asked him this morning about what happened.
Well, we call it a prodrome, where you can see some things are changing mentally. And, you know, he was all of a sudden slurring speech, and the pause with the glass, with the drink of water, didn't seem natural. So I perked up, and then when he went down, I rushed up to the front, and Dr. Matt Klein was already there, and I think Representative Jim Neuberger and Jeff Backer were there. And so I pitched in and tried to help.
What did you all do to try to help?
Well, basically, running up there, there were two thoughts in my mind. We're either in a situation where we have fainting or we have some cardiovascular problem. When I got up there, he wasn't having any trouble breathing. He was sitting up, and I suggested that we get him lying down and put him in what's called a Trendelenburg position, where you lift the legs, have him lie down, get the legs above the head so that you maximize the amount of blood flow to his brain. Typically, these kinds of things are usually vasovagal. And what that means is sometimes there'll be a trigger that causes dilation of your blood vessels. It might be overwork, being tired, stressed, hot, any of those kinds of things. And the governor works hard, so it could have been any of those things. What's supposed to happen when our blood vessels dilate is our heart rate's supposed to go up and compensate for it. But the vagus nerve, which leads to the heart, will sometimes go a little haywire and cause the heart to actually slow. So when I first checked Governor Dayton's pulse, it was in the 30s, and that would be abnormal. That, combined with the fact that he was sweating and appeared to have lost consciousness, indicated to me that it was most likely vasovagal. But I went ahead right away and checked for any neurologic signs that I might see that would indicate any possible stroke. He basically came around pretty quickly and was able to move both hands, demonstrate full flexion and strength in his hands, and he started to respond really quickly.
The slurred speech, though, and the loss of consciousness, does that portend some sort of a neurologic incident?
Well, fainting is a neurologic incident.
Sure.
So it does that. But in terms of...
A greater incident.
Does it portend anything permanent or anything like that? Not necessarily. Anytime we experience a lack of blood flow to our head, the centers that demand the most will be compromised the first. And so that would be things like mathematical computations, speech. Those are complex neurologic functions. So it would be natural that you'd have a few slurred words and things like that. And that was just sort of telling us something's changing.
This is the second time this has happened to the governor. Now, last year it was in a hot, stuffy event and he had some issues. But as a doctor, what does that tell you?
I'm confident that Governor Dayton gets great health care. For me as a physician in the world of family practice and in the trenches, I have many patients that faint multiple times. I have patients that probably make it a habit of doing it once or twice a year. And so what we do in those situations is try to teach them a little bit about what the tip-offs might be. I think Governor Dayton works very hard, and he probably is, at some level, like many people, his own worst enemy. He probably pays less attention to his own needs and more attention to try to get the job done. And I think he probably just caught up in a collision of medical circumstances brought about a faint episode, and I'm just glad he's so committed to service.
Republican Senator Scott Jensen of Chaska talking to our Kathy Werzer. Minnesota's largest community nonprofit serving Somali Americans are making a concerted push for millions of dollars from the state legislature this year. The newly formed Coalition of Somali American Leaders made their pitch yesterday to lawmakers at the Capitol. Naturally, the Sembusa was involved. Laura Ewan reports.
To hear coalition facilitator Hamze Warfa tell it, nothing brings people together like Somalia's most popular fried pastry.
I would never discount the power of food in general, but more so the power of sambusa.
The sambusa, that plump triangle of savory meat or lentils, drew a formidable line of hungry legislators and staff at yesterday's meet and greet.
Everybody, welcome. Welcome to the sambusa. Welcome to the Coalition of Somali American Leaders' second sambusa.
This fledgling coalition of 11 Somali-run nonprofits from across the state represents a new way of doing things at the Capitol. Rather than going solo, members for the first time say they're banding together as a unified voice as they make the case for why the nation's largest Somali community needs focused investment.
There is a saying in Somali that says, "Farka liget fol mataqdo," which means with just one finger you're unable to wash your face.
That's State Representative Ilhan Omar, a DFLer from Minneapolis who recently became the nation's first Somali-American legislator. She says she's proud to see nonprofit leaders in her community team up for shared goals of economic security, home ownership, and youth engagement. Omar thinks her colleagues in the legislature, on both sides of the aisle, will see the benefits of steering some money toward these causes.
Having conversations about entrepreneurship and supporting small businesses, those are not issues that Democrats care about or Republicans care about. It's issues all of us care about.
The coalition is asking lawmakers for an annual $9 million over the next 4 years. The state would ask a third party, such as Youth Prize or Lutheran Social Services, to serve as an intermediary that would issue grants to nonprofits. This proposal is on top of the $2 million the legislature approved last year for similar initiatives as part of Governor Mark Dayton's racial equity plan. Coalition member Fartoon Welly leads the nonprofit Isroon, which serves Somali women and girls.
It's good for the state to really invest in those kind of programs instead of addressing the aftermath of disparity, which usually that's where the money goes. And right now we're saying we have the skills and we know the community. Invest in us and then we can build a community from the bottom up so they're not stuck in poverty forever.
Census data from the first half of this decade indicate that nearly two-thirds of the state's Somali population lives in poverty, and the Somali unemployment rate was 21% on average from 2010 to 2014. But they're not precise estimates. State officials say there's a very large margin of error in the calculations. Also, that they're based on a period when overall unemployment was still higher than normal because of the Great Recession. Republican Representative Jim Knobloch of St. Cloud chairs the House Ways and Means Committee. He agrees that Somalis could benefit from some help from the state, but Knobloch says he would need to hear more about the details of the proposal.
You know, I'm a little reluctant to say that we should have a separate program for this particular racial group and that particular racial group, but certainly you can draft legislation that when you look at the poverty component and so forth, that the Somali community would be eligible and would be able to be reached.
But Hamza Warfa, who is facilitating the coalition and has decades of philanthropic experience, hopes that legislators will see how this new approach can help them too.
The complaint that we heard from a number of elected officials, they don't want to pick, you know, kind of winners and losers.
Warfa says the new initiative will encourage Somali nonprofits to show more transparency and accountability in how they spend their money. And he says it's the first time lawmakers will see a unified agenda coming from leaders representing a refugee population that started making Minnesota its home about 25 years ago. Laura Ewan, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.